So I was actually doing it, right? I was actually, learning how to be a therapist, and I was doing the work as I was, being trained. But I just was hijacked by thoughts of, I'm not good enough to do this. I'm not worth doing this. Just really paralyzing ones. It was really interesting because my supervisor at the time said, and this was a little clue, and I guess this kind of goes into acceptance and commitment therapy. She said, you'll likely always feel this way sometimes. So what are you going to do about that?
Hello, welcome to Act Inspired Behavior, the show about real people and their real stories of transformation and change told through the lens of acceptance and commitment therapy. I'm Gabby Lanier. I was once told that in one lifetime, you can have many different experiences, many different careers. You can live many lives in one life. That there is no limit to the ways in which you can live out your purpose, your values, both personally and professionally. I love this message so much. This statement has really given me the freedom to choose, to change, to go wherever my heart and my compass leads me. And I would say that this mindset describes pretty much my own career path. I've switched career paths several times now, and each of these experiences, I feel like for me, have really only made my ability to adapt greater, my perspective that much richer. But the transition and the change itself really never gets easier per se. So picture this. You just got a new job, and today is your first day. You psych yourself up in the car, you smile, you look good, you have a nice firm handshake with every new person you meet, and perhaps you're starting to sweat right through your clothes. You meet a ton of people. Your head is filled with information and rules and names. And what if this new job is completely different than your last? What if it were in a completely different field? What kinds of thoughts would be running through your head? Does your mind get hijacked by thoughts about how you can get up to speed, prove your competence, be better in this career, better than the last? Do you question your worthiness or skill in being able to meet the expectations of this new job? Greg Bodan, an ACT-based psychotherapist in San Francisco and our guest today, went through a major career change in his early 30s. Though he was encouraged by pretty much everyone around him who were absolutely certain of his ability to become a great therapist, he tells me that he was completely hijacked by thoughts about his ability to be excellent in his work with clients. He had so many different thoughts around, for example, I'm going to mess this up. I'm not good at this. It's so hard. Thoughts characterized by this label or this greater story of being an imposter. So today, Greg is going to share that story and the many ways in which he has responded to this imposter narrative, as well as some really helpful tools that he's used to navigate these thoughts that admittedly still pop up from time to time. So listen to his story and see how you might relate to it in your own way, perhaps as you consider a role change, a job change, or even a career change. See if you can recognize your own internal experiences and ways in which you respond to them. Well, welcome, Greg. I'm so happy to have you here today. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. It's really great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Had been wanting to reach out to you for a while, and I've been following you on Instagram and just loving what you have to say as a mental health therapist. And so I'm happy to have you here in that respect. And I also reached out to you specifically to see if you would kind of share a personal story of your own that highlights acceptance and commitment therapy. And you said you'd be willing to do so. So thank you.
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
But before we get there, do you want to go ahead and just tell everyone about who you are and where you're from and what you do in your role as a therapist?
Yeah, sure. My name's Greg Bodan. I'm a psychotherapist in San Francisco, in California. I have a private practice there, and I primarily work with anxiety and trauma. I also work with men's sexual issues as well. And so most of my work is based based in acceptance and commitment therapy. I've been an ACT therapist for a number of years now. And I provide services to people in the Bay Area.
Excellent. And I know that part of the story that you want to tell today is about your journey as a psychotherapist. And over email, you said you had shared that before becoming a therapist, you had done something radically different. So what was that?
Yeah, so being a therapist is a second career for me. My first career was a librarian and also a library manager. I worked for many years as a manager in libraries and as a librarian. Wow. And then made a big career change.
Yeah, that is a big career change. They don't seem super related, but is there kind of like a link that bridges those two career paths together?
Yeah, they're both helpers. Librarians mm-hmm. love helping people. Mm-hmm. And librarians love supporting people in growth. That's the whole point of a public library, is to help people access resources so they can grow as individuals. And that was sort of the connection. I've always enjoyed that role of helping people. And so that's sort of the connection.
Yeah. Yeah, and that kind of one-on-one dynamic too that you might have with someone who comes to you with some specific issue. And
yeah.
Oh, I can see that. Well, I'm sure those skills have come in handy too over the years.
Yeah, no, it's true. I actually never had any problems doing research in grad school mm-hmm. when I became a therapist. And, you know, now it's finding information, finding good research to back up the work I do is not a problem, because that's what librarians do, is we access information. So those skills come in definitely handy. And it's interesting because, you know, a lot of our social worker colleagues do case management. And in a way, that's what librarians do too, is sort of help people access resources to support them. So as a therapist, I'm often helping my clients make connection to what's out in the community that might help support them. So those kind of overlap there too, where those skills come in really handy.
I love that. Awesome. Well, that is great. And I love to hear kind of the context of where you're coming from, because that, I'm sure that other career path only, you know, benefits you in your therapy and the work that you do with your population. So correct me if I'm wrong, Greg, but I'm going to try to summarize a little bit of what you're going to talk about today. Mm-hmm. Which is to describe you kind of coming into this new career path mm-hmm. and encountering some of the barriers that might come along with doing something new and feeling like an imposter in a new role.
Yep.
So for you, where would this journey start for you when you started to step into this discomfort around taking on a new role?
Well, I guess it would start. So I my bachelor's degree, my undergraduate, you know, straight out of high school, I got a bachelor's degree in psychology and I really liked it. I was pretty young and not quite sure what I wanted to do yet. And I found my way into grad school for library science, and I got a master's in that. And then I started a career in that. And if we fast forward about, you know, 10, 15 years, I had a really great career and I love libraries. It's always been a really important part of my life. But somewhere in my mid, late 20s into my early 30s, I thought, what else is out there? I always loved psychology and I wonder if I could revisit that. And I got a lot of encouragement from a lot of people that you're a great librarian, but you could do whatever you want. And it was great to have that kind of encouragement. And I started thinking about it seriously, when I got into my mid 30s mm-hmm. and started, you know, thinking about what else could I do? I mean, it's sort of like, it felt like if I was going to do a career change that involved more schooling and more training, mm-hmm. this would be a good time. Mm-hmm. And I got really excited around the idea of that we have multiple potentialities, you know, like we can do more than one thing.
Yes.
And I had a wonderful friend who, you know, has been my friend for years, who reminded me, you've always been a helper. You've always been someone who enjoys supporting other people. So chances are you probably need to do something like that. And that was a good point. And then it hit me. I'm like, I have a bachelor's degree in psychology. I really do. The parts of my job in libraries I like are the people parts, the supporting people parts. And so I sort of landed on, I think I want to be a therapist, a psychotherapist. And so in my late 30s, I guess is where this really starts, is I went to grad school. And, you know, I'm in California, and typically you take coursework for a while and then you start actually working with clients, like you do, you know, under supervision.
Yeah.
And actually getting your feet wet in it. And what happened was the classwork part went fine. I've always enjoyed school, and I've always enjoyed learning and learning new theories and stuff. But then I actually had to do the work, and I really got hit with a ton of bricks of I guess we could call it imposter syndrome. Like literally that feeling of, I'm so not good at this. I am so inept at this. I know nothing. I think of imposter syndrome as like a mix of like shame and anxiety. Shame, like there's something wrong with me. I'm clearly not cut out for this. And anxiety that I'm gonna mess up. I'm gonna fail at this. So it's this weird mix. Yeah. And it was paralyzing. So, you know, classwork was going fine, but then when I feel like I was working with clients, I felt like such a novice. It was such a new skill set, and it was so hard. But what was interesting, my supervisor's like, "You're doing a great job. You're exactly where I want you to be. I mean, you're doing exactly what I would expect anybody to do."
You should feel uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yeah. Except that's, and I was actually doing it right. I was actually, you know, learning how to be a therapist, and I was doing the work as I was, you know, being trained. But I just was hijacked by thoughts of, I'm not good enough to do this. I'm not worth doing this. Just really paralyzing ones. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting because my supervisor at the time said, and this was a little clue, and I guess this kind of goes into acceptance and commitment therapy. She said, "You'll likely always feel this way sometimes. So what are you going to do about that?" And like, basically she was saying, I don't think there's going to be a way for you to just stop magically feeling this. You could be really seasoned and experienced, and you might still feel this way sometime. You might need to learn a different way to relate to this. Well, I didn't realize at the time what she was telling me, but sort of as I was kind of really struggling with this, and, you know, it was really affecting my mood. I was getting into a real funk over this, even though I'd show up, I would do my work, but my view of myself in it was really tough. And right about that time was when I started getting trained in one of my classes, and got trained in acceptance and commitment therapy, started getting some training. And that's been a long process of getting training. But it was the first time I ever heard or thought that we could have these thoughts. It could be really painful, really, really difficult and challenging. And that all my efforts to push them away and to stop thinking them weren't really helping, and they were just keeping me miserable, but that there might be another way. Mm. And so I feel like it, you know, my supervisor was right. So I've now been a therapist for a while, and every now and then I still feel like an imposter. And of course my clients come in and they feel like imposters, and boy, can I have some compassion for that. But I feel like I had no idea just how much a set of thoughts or beliefs about yourself, even though you still get out and do what you want, could just totally cripple you.
Yeah.
And so it's been really a journey of learning how to relate to this differently. Like I've stopped trying to make it go away, because it never does. What I've learned to do is sort of move back into the meaning of the work. So that's kind of the quick version of it, but sort of how it's on paper, it looks good. It's like, oh, Greg, you went to grad school and then you became a therapist and then you opened a private practice and it looks good. But then here's what I struggled with. And of course I've noticed it with other clients or other friends who are like, I think I want to change careers, but I'm really scared. And it's like, yeah, it kind of knocks your beliefs about yourself. And you really have to examine some of this stuff, and doubt sets in. And what are you going to do with all of that stuff?
Yeah. So. Wow. I love that we're getting on this topic of career change, because I think it's something that, like you said, it really is the perfect opportunity for that imposter syndrome to, you know, for that seed to be planted and for it to kind of bloom and blossom in your mind. Because you come from a place, like you came from this place, you know, in the library system, you know, you were an expert and you had honed your skills for years. And then you place yourself in a situation where maybe you had, you know, previous knowledge or training, you know, in psychology, in the field of psychology, but you hadn't actually put those skills to practice.
Yep.
And I think that's where it gets really scary, because I feel this as a behavior. I felt this and still feel this. I mean, just like you said, like I still feel this, where you put in situations where it really hits you. I'm in a place of incredible responsibility. Mm-hmm. And the decisions and things that I say and do have a real impact on this person's quality of life. And I could make a mistake that could harm them.
Yeah.
And so it puts you in a situation where you have incredibly, it is high stakes. And then because of that, you put high expectations on yourself to be perfect. And then you look around you and you're like, everyone else is doing a better job than I am. Like,
yep.
What am I doing here? This doesn't come naturally to me the way that it probably does to other people. I would love to know, because you said that the word paralyzing, what do you mean by that? Do you mean in terms of like, how did that impact you? Like, as you were moving through your training and really confronting some of these things of, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. This is really hard. I feel really unskilled at this particular thing. What did that make you do?
Yeah, well, and it, you know, you said something that resonated with me, sort of, you decide you're going to make a career change. And then all of a sudden, you see the responsibility you have, but you pinned it, right? I came into this very new. I'd come from a career where I had been in for years, so I felt very confident and very good about what I could do in that career. And so there's that feeling of responsibility, and I need to not mess this up. And so what would happen, the paralysis was like self-doubt. And when I would start to struggle with that sort of self-doubt that I knew what I was doing, I wasn't as good of a therapist. I would sort of not be as creative. I was forgetting about really cool things that I could try to help my client, right? Or that I had learned that could be pretty awesome and helpful. And instead I'm struggling so much that I'm not being the best therapist. Ironically, I'm not being as good of a therapist as I actually could be, because I'm just like paralyzed by fear and feeling like an imposter. So for me, it was like, I missed out on opportunities to really kind of be present with my client and be like, okay, I think this would help you right now, or this is a way I could support you. Instead, I was present, but my mind was playing tug of war with all this stuff inside of me. So I wasn't being at a, you know, I don't think I was being the best therapist I could be, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that makes total sense, that what you lose is the ability to be there with your client and be able to be in that kind of dynamic space where you're responding to them, but not like getting so stuck in your head where you're like, what's the perfect thing to say or do in this exact moment?
Exactly. I couldn't have said it better myself. That's exactly it. And you get caught up in what's the perfect thing to say, and you miss the opportunity to really do something awesome.
What about in your personal life? Did you see that this translated, or do you feel like those two were pretty separate for you?
Well, I would say kind of leaked into my personal life. And the way I mean by that is, you know, I made this career change, and I got a lot of great feedback and support from people. They're like, that's awesome. That's awesome that you're doing this change, and you're going to be great at it. And I would literally be like, if you only knew, you know, like how bad I am at this.
Yeah.
And so it did leak into my life, into sort of that feeling not so great about myself. You know, sort of like, well, clearly I'm making bad decisions. I'm a failure at this. You know, all these thoughts and feelings start leaking into other areas. So, you know, you burn dinner and you're like, oh, yet another failure, you know, that kind of thing. But it's like that sort of set of beliefs I get, you know, you can get caught up in and get kind of tangled in with.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you some more? I'm going to dig in a little bit here, Greg,
sure.
because you're talking a lot about like that mental space, you know, mm-hmm. like on that hamster wheel. But what about like in terms of your outward actions, did you see any of this tug of war, this struggle happen in your mind internally? And then
for example, like, was this kind of like a triggering event for you at home to then engage in things that, like, bad habits or routines that made you feel stuck personally?
Not really, in the sense that I always knew I wanted to do this and I knew it was the right thing. And so I sort of, if it did, it was a matter of me doing it from this place of not being fully present. So I guess, in other words, I would wake up every day and I would do it anyway. It was like, I made this choice. I know in my heart of hearts, it's the direction I want my life to go. I am absolutely struggling and miserable, but I'm going to keep trying. So for me, it was more about, I was acting the way I wanted. I was making choices every day that felt like, yeah, no, I'm going to work. I'm going to do this. I'm going to try to be a better therapist today. But I was pretty miserable and struggling all the time. So for me, on the outside, it looked like, oh, look, Greg's showing up and he's coming to work and learning how to be a therapist. But inside, it was like a constant just chewing on all the things that were not working for me. So for me, it was more of an internal thing.
Yeah. Just like living in that constant state of discomfort.
Yeah. Yeah. And not really knowing what to do with it and wishing it would go away so that I could then be a good therapist.
Yeah.
Okay, so when I asked this question, I was really expecting a specific kind of answer and was really surprised by how different his experience was. And when I look back at it, you know, of course it was different. We are different people with different lived experiences. I can relate that I too have lived in that constant state of discomfort in each new job or career I've had. But I've also seen that this imposter line of thinking has also bled very much into my personal life in very real, tangible ways. Gosh, in so many ways, like overworking myself, bringing my work home to catch up, feeling so exhausted that I never make time for things that I really like to do, and trading them in for napping, binge watching TV, binge eating, scrolling endlessly on my phone. You know, the list goes on. Moreover, I think that for me, it was one of those things where it was like, I was also really super highly impacted by my social anxiety. And the emotional exhaustion I felt at work was enormous. And I know that this only really contributed to this imposter label, this imposter experience, and this overall cycle that I felt so stuck in. So if that is you, you are so not alone. But let's get back and see how Greg started to navigate this feeling of being hijacked by these imposter thoughts.
And when did that, so let's go back to the part of your journey where you were starting to get that ACT training. Was there a shift for you when it came to having this goal of making that like anxiety, that discomfort go away, and then trying to refocus on what you care about in terms of your values around work?
Yeah, well, I think it started with my supervisor planting the seed, and she wasn't an ACT therapist, but she was basically giving me a very important ACT lesson when she said, you might continue to feel this way for the rest of your career. And she was a seasoned therapist. And it was sort of, that feeling of like, are you kidding me? I thought I'd finally get over this and then I'd be a good therapist. And she was like, no, you're gonna need to learn how to deal with this. And so it was that idea that it might not go away, but I'd better learn how to relate to it differently. And that was okay. So then it's like, while I'm doing that, I'm getting this training and I'm starting to get this idea of how our change agenda, like we try to make something different so that we feel better and it won't work. And, you know, we can try all these creative ways to solve these problems and they don't work. And that moving into more of an acceptance place, that was kind of revolutionary for me. Like, seriously, I think I pretty much thought I could problem solve my way through anything. So clearly I just needed more training. I just needed to read another therapy book. I just needed to watch another therapy video to learn more. And I could problem solve my way out of this. And instead, I started realizing, well, maybe another way would be to just create some space for the struggle and the thoughts and the feelings that are so overwhelming. And could I approach them differently?
Yeah.
And boy, did that blow my mind, because I just had never even considered that. That was a possibility. And I kind of feel like it's part of just being socialized in our culture. It's like, something's wrong, fix it. fix it. Just go out and problem solve, fix it.
Stop crying.
Yes. And
go to your room.
My supervisor's basically saying, I don't know that you can fix this that way. I don't think you can turn off these feelings and thoughts. So come up with a new approach. So for me, that was kind of where things started to shift. And you know, I don't want to make it sound like it was a light switch. It was more of a an ongoing practice. So of being with a client and feeling like, oh, I don't feel like I'm good at this. Ooh, what do I do with that? What do I notice about it? Starting to kind of build up some mindfulness around it. That, and it took a while, right? It wasn't like, oh, okay, I'll just accept that. That was a hard battle for me. You know?
Yeah. And it sounds like some of those, like you said, those strategy, those control strategies were to like learn more, get more training, mm-hmm. like read, which is kind of funny because again, going back to the library science degree, it just makes sense that that would be your solution.
There's always a book that might help me solve this.
There's gotta be an answer somewhere in a book. I just haven't read it yet.
Exactly.
But your solution was letting go of the rope. Which is in many minds, not a solution.
Right. And actually and of course we're doing this on audio and maybe you've talked about this in other podcasts, but do you know what those little Chinese finger cuffs are? Have you heard of these?
Like the Chinese finger trap?
Yes. And so it's like where you put your fingers in and you try to pull them out and your fingers get stuck. Mm-hmm. And the key is you've got to relax so that they loosen up. And I literally had a professor who handed those out in class. And I was like, okay, this is clearly my imposter syndrome. I'm going to have to figure out how to do this differently.
I like how they handed them out in class. That's
perfect. Yeah. I had a great ACT trainer, teacher. So she passed them out and she's like, this is really what this is all about. Try to get out of these things and your hands get stuck in them.
Okay. Let's pause again because this metaphor is so powerful. Let's take a moment to try this out. As Greg says, his finger trap was the imposter experience of being a new therapist. But what about you? For me, it was imposter label combined with social anxiety and the need to show up and be on, the obligation to please others, and the desire to stop feeling so damn awkward. Whatever your struggle is, it doesn't have to be big to do this little bit of work. So put your fingers together, pretending to slide them into those woven tubes of your finger trap, and then hold it there for just a second. Then engage yourself in the struggle of pulling your fingers away, trying to release yourself from this trap. You know what would happen. And you know, you're going to have to do it in your mind's eye because you likely don't have a finger trap at your disposal right now. But notice your tendency, just like Greg, that you might think that you can problem solve your way out of this, that you can kind of just pull by sheer force to get out of it. And this confidence that you can disentangle yourself out of the situation, if only you pull harder, it's kind of a trap, literally and figuratively. And this is the perfect setup for this metaphor because the more you pull, the more entangled you become. Now let's look back to what Greg's saying about how he can maybe consider some other alternatives to this dilemma.
And she's like, okay, how are you going to get out? And that, you know, we've got to, like you said, drop the rope, let go of the struggle a little bit.
Yeah. It's so counterintuitive.
And Boy, is it.
It's hard to wrap your mind around too, because I think, you know, not to go too much off topic, but I think of just this whole craze around like diet culture, you know, I feel uncomfortable in my body. Therefore I must eat better, exercise more. I must have more discipline, more self-control, da, 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 da. And there is a small segment of that, you know, the nutritional world, you know, that ascribe to the opposite, which is relinquishing control, like mm-hmm. all control. And it's really scary. And I've done this multiple times, but I'm now on this kind of path of like, okay, I really am going to just release control over the agenda of being thin, you know? in service of my values of living a healthy, energy-giving lifestyle, you know, that's fun and adventuresome and doesn't have anything to do with exactly how I look. It's how I've lived my life, you know? So it's really, and the same thing with like in your describing in your work, it's this subtle transition, the subtle shift that you don't think is that powerful as you read it in a book. But when you really do it, like physically, when you did that finger trap, it's like, oh yeah, like this is how it works. Yeah. And it's hard. It's hard to do. It's hard to kind of get yourself in that space. But once you've practiced it multiple times, it's like you get used to the discomfort. You get used to the practice of it. And it changes that dynamic for you just enough to be like, oh, this actually isn't so bad. Like feeling sad a little bit or feeling this way a little bit isn't actually as bad as I thought it would be.
Okay, so now I want you to practice this exact same dynamic. Put those finger trap fingers together again. And rather than trying to pull apart this time, which is really very intuitive to do, allow yourself to just relax into it. To me, it's like taking a deep breath. I do this a lot. You know, I breathe in through my nose like this. I hold it and imagine, you know, myself with those finger cuffs on, and then release out through my mouth like this. And as I'm doing so, my shoulders relax. And I'm also kind of making space, allowing whatever to be there to just show up, you know? Okay, so let's go back to the conversation at hand and see what Gray has to say about the things he's doing to let go and allow for space rather than pulling harder on that trap.
I mean, if I think about where I'm at now, so I've been a therapist for years now. I still notice imposter syndrome sometimes, right? I notice those thoughts and those feelings of like, I'm not worthy or I'm not good enough and whatever. And what's interesting is I notice them, but I kind of notice them sort of like the joke I make with some of my clients. It's kind of like learning to relate differently to the stuff. You know, it's like, oh, wow, this is uncomfortable. Yeah, I recognize this. Oh, hello, it's you again. I recognize you. Okay, this isn't comfortable, but I can deal with it. And we kind of can get that for some physical things where it's like maybe you went for a long hike and now you're really sore and you're like, oh, this isn't comfortable, but I'm not gonna panic over it. And it's like, ooh, I'm feeling kind of like an imposter right now. And to me, what my supervisor was trying to tell me years ago was you're gonna have that come up and you're gonna learn to relate to it in a way that's more helpful, you know.
Mm-hmm. When you're in a session with a client, do you ever model some of these strategies to your client, or do you kind of keep some of these things just kind of to yourself?
Oh no, I definitely share a big, you know, for a lot of acceptance and commitment therapy therapists, you know, it's experiential for us as well. And so I feel like it's important to be able to share, you know, in an appropriate way, you know, what it's like to be another human in the room and to do this very human struggle that we don't want to suffer and we want to push away pain. And so I feel like when it's appropriate, I think it's really important that we show up for our clients as humans who are on the same path.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it can be so powerful and validating too for someone to hear, like, actually it's really validating for me to hear you say this. Even though you've been practicing now for years, doing this work for years, but you still encounter these things, and that's okay. So, just to maybe to end with, Greg, if someone would be like the fly on the wall in the room as you're experiencing this experience of imposter syndrome, could you like walk us through real quick what a typical scenario might be and how you would then respond to it in real time?
Yeah, sure. I'm in a session and I'm like, this isn't going as well as I want. Maybe I'm just not, you know, feeling like I'm getting somewhere or helping this client. And the thoughts start showing up. The thoughts of, well, clearly you're screwing this up. You know, thoughts of, well, yet again, you're a failure. And I think the most powerful thing I learned in all my training that was personally helpful to me was the idea of cognitive diffusion.
Okay, and just real quick, in case you're not real familiar with cognitive diffusion, it's the term that we use in ACT to talk about distancing ourselves from our thoughts, with the whole idea of starting to take what is normally really painful for us, really powerful and can hijack us, as Greg says, and start to distance from it to create more space, and not just by responding to those same experiences in the same reactive way. So let's see how Greg engages in that distancing.
I start to notice like, oh, it's those thoughts again. And I can sort of label them. And that honestly is what happens to me in the moment, is I start to label them. I'm like, oh, look, they're starting. I'm starting to notice those kinds of thoughts. And then I sort of like try to get into what's going on right now. And that's when I start noticing my body and like my feelings and where they're happening. And you know, that I'm feeling some anxiety and some shame. And you know, I usually feel it in my throat and my chest. And then, you know, by doing that, I'm kind of now I'm a little more in the present moment of what's actually going on. And then I can start to create some space and be kind of willing, like, ah, I'm feeling this. Mm-hmm. And sort of notice it and then be like, wait a minute, what's going on here? And then what matters? And what matters is actually what the person across from me, well, or now video, is saying. And can I observe everything that just happened in my body and my thoughts that are racing now? And can I go back to what they're saying? So can I gently focus back on them? And, you know, it's a practice, right? It's kind of like a meditation practice. And so some days are great and I can do it, and other days it's more of a struggle. But being able to kind of get to that point of, all right, back to what's actually going on right now in the room, you know, and sort of letting go of a lot of that stuff. Mm-hmm.
Is there like one specific metaphor that you go to time and time again that helps you unhook from some of these thoughts in the moment?
My favorite one is actually not quite the metaphor. It's just the simple kind of mantra, if you will. Am I having a thought or am I buying into a thought? Oh. And I can kind of feel when I'm buying into a thought, because my body starts reacting and I start having feelings that are related to it, and I'm starting to try to push against it. And so then I can be like, can I have this thought? Can I notice it? You know, instead of buying into it and getting hooked into it.
Yeah. Love that. Yeah. And I think it is like really helpful and key. I love that you said mantra, because, oh, wait, hi, Valentine. That's my dog. She's just like barging into the room, jumping off the bed, scratching the floor. It's like, have those like key things that can kind of cue you to then kind of go through this sequence, because it is kind of complex. And one of my big, big questions in the work that I do is, okay, I understand ACT. How do you actually do ACT? You know, so that's why I named my business ACT Inspired Behavior, because I want my behavior to be really highly influenced by these ACT processes, these skills, you know, but how do you infuse these skills into your everyday life when they matter the most? And kind of like how you have your mantra, you know, there's my thought. Am I buying into my thought? Having those, you know, whatever they are unique to you, to help cue you to go through that process of that skill. It's so key. And it takes a lot of practice and a lot of kind of reflection on like what really works for you. Mine is the thank you mind. I say it multiple times a day, every day. Mm-hmm. And it is so helpful to me, because I think of my anxiety as like my buddy who just hangs out with me all day. Kind of coming in and out, but sometimes real close to me and sometimes, you know, far away. But when it shows up, it's just, you know, sometimes it can be hilarious and sometimes it can be compassionate, but it's like that same phrase is just always there. And it's really helpful for me to recognize that it's like, it's not me, you know?
Yeah.
So
the other one that I often, if I have a moment, it doesn't happen as much in session because I'm kind of working, but if I'm just in my own space, I'll try to use Leaves on a Stream, where I sort of observe, like, if I can imagine leaves floating downstream and start to connect that this is exactly what my thoughts are right now, you know, and I can pick them up and I can put them back in the stream. I find if I have a little more space, that one's really helpful for me too. I don't know why the visual, I can react to it really well, but I can see that and I can believe it, you know?
Yeah. I love that we're nerding out on metaphors.
Well, and there's a lot of good ones in ACT, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's that imagery, you know, because it really puts you there in that moment. You can do the action. Like you described the Chinese finger trap. And even though I don't literally have one, it's like, I can put my fingers together and kind of visualize, because I've used one before, you know? So it can be such powerful way of, you know, provoking those situations and then kind of connecting to it.
You're right. And in a way, like, I don't know, maybe it's kind of like how when we watch movies, like if I told you the plot of the movie, you'd be like, that's nice. But if you sit and watch the movie, it just affects you on a different level. I feel like those metaphors are like that. It's like, oh, I get it. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. I did the leaves on the stream metaphor last summer. And it was like really cold water. And we were, other people were like rafting down the river and I didn't have my swimming suit and I really wanted to go in the water. And I was like, oh, but I don't have my swimming suit and I'll get all like wet and cold. And I saw a leaf go down the stream and I'm like, you know what? That was just a thought I had. I'm just going to jump in this water right now.
Oh, awesome.
And I did. And it was, I don't remember what episode it was in. I kind of told that metaphor, but I didn't say that I actually did that, but it was crazy how much it helped release me from that rule that I was having or on that thought.
Totally. Totally. Oh, I love that. You literally got in the stream with the leaf and just went on float.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I jumped in and I was like, well, cool.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
And if you're curious to know what episode I'm referring to, it's episode number 4, Breaking the Rules with Jessica Zilski. About halfway through the episode, I talk about the idea of wanting to jump into a river, but then get fused to the rule that it would be too cold. Okay, so back to the interview.
So, okay. Well, thank you, Greg. Thank you for sharing this journey and sharing just your passion. I know quite a few people who listen to this are, you know, really wanting to either use ACT in their life personally. And then also there's people who professionally want to use it. And so this is a really helpful conversation, I think, for a lot of people.
I always meet people who want a career change and it's like, you might get in touch with some of this stuff. And what are you going to do?
Yes, you know? Yes, yes. That part of your story is so helpful too. But before we go, I would love for you to tell people how they can find you if they want to learn more about you or if they want to follow you on social media.
So my website is my name. So it's www.gregbodin.com. And my Instagram is @gregbodinpsychotherapy.
All right. Well, thanks again, Greg. It was really lovely meeting you and talking to you.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. Thank you.
What is an imposter? What does that mean? Do you know what an imposter means?
Bad guy.
Oh, a bad guy. Mm-hmm. What does an imposter say?
Bad things.
Oh.
Stop right now or I will do something.
You just heard from Greg Bodin, a licensed psychotherapist with a private practice in San Francisco. Thank you so much, Greg, for telling your story of stepping into a new career and your experience of discomfort, uncertainty, doubt, all of the things that are really uncomfortable to talk about. So, and also thank you for navigating through it and staying in your field and continuing to work towards your values of being a helper. I know for sure that so many people have benefited directly from your work. Like Greg said, sometimes being hijacked by these thoughts don't necessarily lead us towards such, you know, horrible, terrible outcomes. You know, we can still function. But what I love about this story is how it highlights the cost of this rumination, this overthinking, that it takes us out of the moment and back into our heads. But what about if we were able to let go of that finger trap? Stop pulling away from the discomforting thoughts. What would that allow us to do? Could we be better listeners, be more compassionate for others, deepen our own self-compassion, you know, and be the kind of therapist or professional or human that you really want to be, even if it's not perfect. I also want to say that as I'm continuing on my own career path, I've certainly leaned into discomfort. And when it comes to being, you know, an inexperienced business owner, so much discomfort. Being an introverted podcast host, so much discomfort. A novice ACT practitioner, it just shows up everywhere for me, and I'm sure it does for you too. And I want to share that along the way, you know, through the process of doing this podcast, I've grown more and more comfortable with the discomfort. I also realize that the people I want to serve the most are people who share this similar lived experience. Folks who are introverted, experience social anxiety, find it hard to show up and be social in a social world, feel uncomfortable in the spotlight, but who all also have such important things to say, who can be amazing, innovative, and inspiring leaders. And if you haven't seen my work yet as a life coach, behavior coach, or whatever you want to call me, in my private practice, I provide services to what I call vibrant introverts. Honestly, I've realized that this is the work I want to do. Through the process of leaning into those really hard moments, of continuing to show up and write and produce this podcast, I've continued to show up despite that discomfort. And so I plan to interview more and more self-identified introverts. And if that is you, please reach out. I want to hear your voice. I want to get to know you and empower you to tell your story through the lens of acceptance and commitment therapy. And if you yourself are in a place of uncertainty or doubt around your own ability to do your work right now in a way that feels super authentic and good to you, remember Greg's supervisor. She said, "You might be exactly where you need to be in terms of discomfort. You'll likely always feel this way. So, what are you going to do about it?" When you are playing baseball, you swing your bat, whoosh, but then you miss the ball. What do you say in your mind?
I don't want to do this.
I don't want to do this? Yeah. If you are interested in reaching out and telling your story, or would like to learn more through my blog, workshops, or coaching, find me on Instagram at ActInspiredBehavior. Email me at gabby@actinspiredbehaviorcoaching.com or use the link listed in my show notes. I'd love to hear from you. You say, "Oh man."
No, is it?
If this episode resonated with you, subscribe to this podcast and stay tuned for future episodes. And please take a moment to rate and review this show. It's so helpful in getting others to find this show. Thank you so much. So you have a grumpy face on. Okay. Do you ever say, "I got this"?
No.
No. The grumpiest look on your face. Hello again. I want to take a moment and say that this podcast is for educational purposes only. Content and conversation provided in this podcast should not be taken as or replace professional or therapeutic recommendations. As a board-certified behavior analyst, my goal is to disseminate ACT and behavior analysis to the wider public and have meaningful conversations to further explore our understanding. If you are concerned about your own personal well-being, I encourage you to seek out the help of a licensed professional who can provide individual support to you. Thank you so much. Here's my question for you. Who is your daddy and what does he do?
Talk on the radio.
Why do you look so frustrated?